Welcome to the Student Sessions, the unedited podcast for students and graduates that tells it like it is and addresses the issues that are important to you, today and every day. Brought to you by The Branding Man and hosted by Tonya Galati.
Hi, and welcome to the Student Sessions with me, Tonya. Today I'm joined by Hannah Sultan. Hannah worked in corporate HR and recruitment for 8 years, including 5 years at BT and 3 years leading UK graduate recruitment at law firm Allen & Overy. She later became a career coach and consultant, delivering career coaching programmes for graduates looking to develop the skills and awareness needed to secure their dream job. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Tonya. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Welcome to the Student Sessions. Thanks for joining us. Which part of the world are you in today?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm currently in East London. I live in Leighton near the Olympic Park.
Right. Okay. Today's theme is about nudging comfort zones and learning from rejection. So first of all, let's talk about nudging comfort zones. What do we mean by this, Hannah?
Well, when I've talked with a lot of my coaching clients about nudging comfort zones, and it's one of those things I think most people are pretty comfortable living in their comfort zones, hence why they're called comfort zones. But what I have learned personally over the years is that my biggest times of growth and my biggest times of when I've learned stuff about myself and developed have been when I have been a bit uncomfortable in the process. So either trying something new or trying something that I'm scared of. I've found that almost just, slightly on the edge of my comfort zone is where the best kind of growth and learning comes from, really.
And what's wrong with just staying within your comfort zone?
I wouldn't say there's anything wrong per se. And I would say that it's most people, including myself's natural inclination. It's comfy for a reason. But I think for me, the distinction is it's not about, leaping wildly outside your comfort zone and scaring yourself so much that you retreat back in and never pop out again. But I think almost it's a slow, gentle, consistent process of just trying new things rather than just staying stationary and staying still.
Okay, so is it something that would help in terms of development rather than, let's do something that we're really uncomfortable with and it's just not going to have any impact?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not doing something wild for the sake of it. It's doing something, it's doing something new or doing something that you haven't done before or maybe doing something that you don't consider yourself yet an expert in, almost for the sake of learning and growth. So it's almost for the sake of the process rather than for the sake of the outcome.
Right. Okay. So how do we nudge our comfort zones?
So what I often talk about a lot with coaching clients that I work with is just what they are afraid of and what they're scared of, as well as also reflecting on if they could do anything without being scared, what would it be? And nudging your comfort zones looks very different for different people. So for some people, it will be public speaking, speaking to a really large audience. It might be becoming a board member or doing something quite big. For other people, it could just be being a bit more visible in team meetings. It could be joining a club or a new society. So that's the thing that I feel really passionately about is nudging your comfort zone looks very, very different for different people. And what some people find comfort zone nudging could be, just a normal day for someone else. And it's very relative, it comes down to you personally, what is a little bit, just that step forward for you.
Okay. So obviously mindful that, what you've said there about how nudging looks very different for everybody. I think one of the things that a lot of students and graduates talk to me about is that they feel uncomfortable in doing presentations in lectures or classes because they feel that everyone's looking at them and, they're going to look silly. So let's take that as an example. Mm. How would you nudge? How would you get yourself from being sitting there thinking, there's not a chance I'm standing up in front of everyone, to standing up and speaking?
Mm. Yeah, I think that is a really good example to pick, because I actually think that most people are pretty scared of it. And, you know, whether it is speaking out in a team environment, whether it is presenting to a small number of people or a large number of people, public speaking is the number one fear. I read once that it's the number one fear over death. So actually someone would rather be, would actually be more scared of doing the eulogy at a funeral rather than it being their own funeral. So I'd say it's a really universal fear, and I'm just such a big advocate for practice. I think that practice is a really underrated thing to get better at anything, whether it's interviewing, presenting, networking. The more we practice stuff, the more normal it becomes. And even though it might feel scary, and even though we might make mistakes and mess up, I do believe that things like that need to be, you get better at it through practice, not through learning about it theoretically or academically. To answer your question specifically about public speaking, I think you have to start small. So actually just practicing on your own, talking out loud, most people don't do. So most people, when they're preparing for a presentation, they make notes or they read things, rewrite things, perfect slides. But actually practicing out loud is something that most people feel a bit awkward doing. And even recording themselves on their phone and practicing to a friend or practicing in a mirror. And these kind of practical things can make such a difference and just normalize it a little bit more, so we're a bit more used to hearing the sound of our own voice.
Okay. So what are the benefits of nudging our comfort zones on our life goals and career aspirations?
I would say that the main benefit is raising self-confidence, because again, similar to a fear of public speaking, I think the vast majority of us could do with feeling a little bit more confident. We all have doubts, we all have insecurities, and I think that's very normal. It's part of the human experience. But the more we practice and the more we confront those fears in a controlled way, the more we tackle them and the less intimidating they seem. I think that just, you know, mild exposure to what we're scared of makes it just seem that little bit less intimidating, and we just get a little bit more used to it. And the feeling of, you know, feeling proud or feeling, just feeling like you've actually done something to take control and to practice. Just giving a brief example of myself. So I have never liked public speaking. I've never enjoyed or thought I'm particularly good at presenting or doing things like that. But it's something that I had to do a lot in my corporate role. And it's something that it benefits me a lot to do it with my current job now. And I still get nervous. I still get a lot of, butterflies in the tummy and all kind of things like that. But I have found that the more I do it, the more bearable it is. And actually, yeah, I just think we don't learn and grow unless we put ourselves in situations that make us feel a little bit more comfortable, and then slowly stretch and expand our comfort zone. But it's not easy. If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Some of our listeners may be thinking, why would I push myself out of my comfort zone and potentially make myself look silly? What advice would you give to them?
Well, the first thing that I would say is that that's a really normal and common thing to think, and it's you trying to protect yourself. Yeah, if you're scared of making a mistake, if you're scared of getting it wrong, of failing, if you're scared of doing a presentation badly and getting laughed at or getting criticised, of course it's the natural thing to want to avoid those situations and to want to avoid risk and not put yourself at risk of being vulnerable. So it's a very, very understandable and normal thing to fear. And I actually would say if it's something that's not right for you, revisit it at a later date. But I think a big misconception is you need to feel brave to do something courageous. I often think the bravery comes later. I think that if you are committed to trying new things, if you're committed to developing yourself, you can force yourself to do certain things that don't necessarily feel that easy, but you learn and grow for them. So yeah, I just don't think you need to feel brave in order to act bravely. You can try things that are a little bit new, a little bit out of your comfort zone, and learn from them. And you might not feel very confident before, but even if it doesn't go exactly to plan, you will feel a lot more confident afterwards because you will have tried and you will have done something and you will have had a go. And I think it's just, yeah, it's a employers and people that are looking to hire people respect proactivity and respect people having a go rather than people that, you know, are too scared to try anything.
Okay. And just moving on from that, actually, you know, rejection, I guess, you know, obviously we could try things and then we, you know, we get rejected. So let's talk about rejection a little bit as our second theme. What do we mean when we talk about rejection?
Rejection can mean anything. It can mean rejection from dating. It can mean rejection from jobs that you apply for. It can mean rejection, feeling rejected in a networking situation. If you feel like you're not connecting well at a networking event. I would say that generally when I talk with people that I work with about rejection, it's job applications. So either a rejection after application, a rejection after interview, or very often not hearing back at all. So that is a real bugbear of a lot of student and early career applicants that when they don't hear back from employers, and it can feel really painful and really frustrating to feel rejected but not even have closure.
And is it possible to avoid rejection?
I personally don't think it is possible to avoid all rejection. You certainly can do your best to try and protect yourself from it by not going for opportunities. But I think in the long run, I think that protecting yourself from going for opportunities that you want to avoid the short-term pain of rejection, you end up with more pain in the long run. Because I think that almost the more rejection we experience, if we process it and learn from it, that ultimately can make us more resilient, even better placed to tackle stuff the next time. So I don't think you can totally avoid rejection. You can do things that artificially protect you in the short term from rejection, but I think in the long term, it is unavoidable, and it's absolutely nothing to be ashamed of.
And just picking up on something you said there, Hannah, you know, obviously we do often, at all points in our lives, I guess, have to deal with rejection. And often, I guess, you know, that whole thing around being embarrassed means that we don't talk about our rejection. Kind of what's the danger of not talking about rejection?
Well, the first thing that I would say is I totally understand why people don't talk about rejection. It's we like to protect ourselves and we want to save face, and talking about things that we have personally been rejected from can feel painful, and it can feel embarrassing, and it can feel exposing to admit to our friends when we've got rejected from a job. But unfortunately, the wider negative impact of that is when we're not vocal about rejection, we assume it doesn't happen to other people. We're comparing our internal self-doubt and our internal self-criticism and all the rejection we know we've faced with everyone else's shiny, curated external exterior. You know, we hear about our friends when they have job offers, but we don't often hear from our friends and our acquaintances when they get rejected. And so we're comparing, you know, all of our failures that we know we've experienced with other people's, you know, external best. And it's just not a like for like comparison. And so, yeah, I think the more people can talk about rejection, the better, because it is just totally normal. And it doesn't mean it's pleasant. It doesn't mean it's easy, but it is a fact of life. And in my opinion, if you're applying for jobs and don't get rejected for any of them, you're not applying for roles that are ambitious enough. And actually, even great people get rejected. And I think the earlier you can start working on your own mindset around that, the better. But it's certainly not a quick fix. And yeah, even the people that are most aware that rejection is normal, yeah, it can still absolutely feel painful going through it.
So as you said, that we've all experienced rejection at some point, and we'll use the example of maybe not getting the job that we wanted, or as a student, a graduate, feeling that we're making endless applications and not getting anywhere. Why is rejection so difficult?
I think rejection is so difficult because it often feels very personal. It feels like it's a personal rejection of us as an individual. And so often when people get rejected, our thoughts are, we are not good enough. I am not good enough for this company. I am not good enough for that job. And it's a really natural response, but I would really encourage students who are rejected to reframe their mindset around it. And as someone who worked in recruitment for many years and who read lots of applications and hired lots of people and rejected lots of people, you know, it is a competitive process, but it's also not a, you know, perfect process. And so just because you were rejected doesn't mean you are not quote unquote good enough. It might mean that you're not right for the role, but there are so many external factors. And I think candidates often don't think about this. So they don't think about the fact that there could have been a really high volume of applications for that role this particular year, or the quality of other applications might have been really amazing, or the company that they're applying for might have had their numbers reduced, so actually they might be hiring for fewer roles. The role might have even been cancelled. So these are not excuses. They're not to say every time you get rejected, it's not your fault. But I think it is really, really important that when candidates get rejected, they see the big picture and they recognise that whilst there might have been things on their application that could be better, it doesn't mean that you are not good enough. It doesn't mean that you won't be successful in the future. And you should never read it as an absolute condemnation that you are not right for that company forever.
You mentioned earlier about closure. So this, you know, lots of students and graduates and, you know, might say, well, actually, I don't even get replies. And that, you know, not having closure and not kind of, that could be quite, from a student's point of view, when you've spent a lot of time making an application to then not get a reply, that kind of adds on to the fact that you've been rejected. So how do you, I guess, deal with that in terms of not having closure to then move on?
The first thing that I would say is if you apply for a job and you don't hear back for a significant period of time, I wouldn't be afraid to send the company a polite check-in email. And how you word that email is important. So rather than being a, you know, why haven't I heard back, actually just saying, do you know when I'm likely to hear back, or do you know when I am likely to find out the outcome of my application, can sometimes be helpful in getting feedback. Now, when you do that varies a great deal, and candidates tend to do that before, that they may do it way too early. So for graduate roles where there's a high volume of applications, see if there's any guidance on the firm's website. So for example, if they say, we will aim to get back with you within 3 weeks, then maybe if you haven't heard back within 5 weeks, you might send them a follow-up email. But if they say on their website, if we don't get back to you, or if you have not heard back from us, please assume it's a rejection, then you might just have to take it as a rejection. So base when you send that follow-up on guidance that they give. But if they say they're going to get back with you within a certain time and they haven't, don't assume it's a no. Do send them a follow-up email just asking for a little bit of an update. In terms of how you process rejection, whether it's implicit or whether it's just you've not heard back from them and you never hear back from them, so you know it is a rejection. My advice would be, first of all, process it and give yourself a little bit of time to grieve. That might sound a bit dramatic, but actually being rejected from your dream role is upsetting, and it can hurt. So actually allowing yourself to feel that and not bury it or fight it can be the first step, almost recognizing and accepting it. The second thing that I would recommend doing is doing some objective reflection. And this is also really good to do after an interview. So if you've got rejected from an interview, and doing some objective reflection. So really thinking about and writing down what specifically went well from your perspective from the interview, and what specifically you would want to do differently next time. So if in an ideal world, you would get loads of detailed feedback from either a rejected application or a rejected interview. In reality, you will probably get very little, if any. So do your own objective reflection by writing down specifically what you found difficult, what you found easy, what you think went well. And as I said, if you were in that situation again, what you would do differently. And those notes that you write down will be really, really helpful for when you next go to an interview or for when you next go to an application form.
So in terms of, you know, they're really great practical steps to take, but in terms of, I guess some people find it difficult to kind of get back up from being rejected and kind of get back into that positive mindset. What kind of techniques or, you know, self-care activities, I guess, would help in terms of the mindset of coping with rejection?
Well, the first thing that I would say is it's totally normal, as I said before, and it's okay to feel hurt. It's okay to feel rejected, but you need to almost process it, learn from it, and then move on. So specific things you can do are journaling, so writing down your reflections, writing down if you feel angry or upset or hurt or frustrated, actually writing all of that down. The next thing is writing down specific learning. So for example, if you found, if you got rejected from a written application and you did some online tests and you found the online tests really, really difficult, you might make yourself a mini goal to practice online tests more. So whatever it is, you need to take some learning away. So it might be you need to practice online tests more. It might be that you want to practice writing your motivation down in a more compelling way. For example, if there was a question about what's your motivation for joining this firm that you don't think you did so well. So take the learning, but frame it in the future. So rather than thinking about past negative, so I got this wrong, I got this wrong, think about what you need to do in the future to be better. So as much as I am a fan of positive psychology and having a positive mindset, sometimes that just doesn't feel possible. But what is possible is focusing on the future rather than the past. So for example, if you're overly caught up with mistakes you've made, with failures you've experienced, with rejection, rather than thinking about the past, just turn your attention, turn your energy and turn your direction towards the future. What applications are you going to complete next? What networking event or online networking event are you going to attend next? How can you deepen your commercial awareness? Or how can you deepen your understanding of a firm's culture? Can you do any networking or reach out to some people that work there? So I would say it's very, very natural to be focused in the past negative. But if you turn your attention towards the future proactive, so what are you going to do next? What's the plan? Where can you grow from this? What can you learn from it? Then just that shift from past to future can sometimes help you move forward and grow from it.
Mindful that we're coming to the end of our time together, Hannah, just one final question to wrap up. What advice would you give to your 18-year-old self, both around nudging out of your comfort zone, but also dealing with rejection?
Oh, gosh. Well, when I think back to my 18-year-old self, so I went to Manchester University when I was 18, which was a long time ago now. What would I tell myself? I think the biggest thing is it's okay to feel scared, and it's you don't have to feel brave to do stuff. Up until even quite recently, I felt like people that did ambitious things, or people that made themselves visible, or people that, you know, took opportunities, I just assumed that they didn't feel scared. I assumed that they were these brave, courageous, flawless people. And now I realize that there is just great vulnerability in being honest and being real. And yeah, you don't need to feel fully confident before you take steps forward. And as I said, let alone my 18-year-old self, I think my sort of 30-year-old self didn't realize that. So I would just say it's okay to feel scared, but it doesn't mean that you can't do anything. There are always small steps that you can take to grow, to learn, and to keep nudging your comfort zone forward. But it's okay that feels a bit scary.
Hannah, you've provided some really great insights and advice there around comfort zones and rejection handling, which I'm sure our audience have found really helpful. Thank you very much for joining us on the Student Sessions. Hope you've enjoyed your time with us.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you. I could talk about it all day, but yeah, it's been really great. Thank you, Tanya.
And to our listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's episode and do join us again on the Student Sessions.
Thanks for listening to the Student Sessions, brought to you by The Branding Man and hosted by Tanya Galati. Never miss an episode by subscribing And if you liked what you heard today, then why not leave a review? We'll see you at the next session.